You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and guest host Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host today, Dr. Melody Fox, clinical psychologist and marriage family therapist. Alan Cardoza is out working on a case today, actually saving a kidnapped girl, and we really wish him well on a speedy and safe recovery, and he should be back in the studio next week. As with both of us having at least 30 years experience working with families in crisis, we have been fortunate, very fortunate, to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. As we bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future, as each week we address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. As we bring to you each week, Answers for the Family. Now, today we are talking about so much more, a wonderful way to bring the family together, and not just the family, but the whole community. Our guest today is Maggie Stuckey, who is a writer who grows vegetables and cooks up a storm in her Portland, Oregon home. And I also hear that she is the author of Bountiful Container and seven other books on gardening and horticulture, but says she's happy when tending her vegetable garden and using the outcome to create the new soups. Now, the book we're going to be talking about today is her latest book called Soup Night, Recipes for Creating Community Around a Pot of Soup. And it is wonderful. Maggie, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I'm really excited. I got your book a little while ago, and I've already picked out a lot of recipes to start trying to do.
Good.
But what I really enjoy are all the stories that you tell in here and how everybody comes together in the community and how it's just exploded all over the world, it seems. So can you tell us a little bit about how Soup Night tradition got started?
Sure, I will. I'll tell you how it became important in my life. I was invited to a soup night in my hometown of Portland, Oregon. Actually happens to be the neighborhood where my brother lives. And it's an inner city neighborhood in a fairly big city. I mean, Portland's not as big as Los Angeles, but, you know, it's not a small town.
Right.
And I was astonished, absolutely blown away the first night when I saw how close they are. This is just one block. It's all the households on both sides of the street from corner to corner. They are, because it's, I mean, they have all the different demographic threads that you would expect in a big city. You know, different races, different religions, different ages, different occupations, different in so many ways that they wouldn't maybe naturally form friendships, but because they get together once a month and sit down and have this meal together, they have created an incredibly rich, loving community just within this one block. It's like being in a small town because they all know each other. They all help each other out and take care of each other and have fun together, and they all cherish all the children on the block. It's absolutely the most wonderful thing to sort of fall into the way I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started thinking, I wonder if I can find one or two other neighborhoods in other parts of the country. I found 50 where people have the same kind of yearning of wanting to know their neighbors, wanting to live in a neighborhood mm-hmm. where people are genuine neighbors with each other. And the astonishing thing to me is that they all hit upon the same strategy, which is let's make a giant pot of soup and invite everybody and see what happens.
I think it's lovely. And I've been telling a lot of people about Soup Night. And whenever I have clients that say they like soup, I go, oh, there's a great new book out.
Yeah.
You haven't considered. One of the things that did come up is they were talking about, well, I don't live in an area that I want everybody to come in, you know, very urban area, or maybe they're in apartment complexes or things. But I keep thinking, even in a condominium or apartment complex, that's still something you could do, maybe even on a smaller scale. and get to know your neighbors.
Of course you can. You can define your group however you want to. I mean, it could be everybody in your apartment building. It could be everybody who has a plot in the same community garden. It could be everybody in your Sunday school class. But I really like to encourage people to give it a try, to be as inclusive as possible. And even if you think you don't like someone, I can pretty much guarantee that when you get together a couple of times, you're going to find some way that you have something in common. I bet everybody has experienced this. There's something about sitting down at a table and sharing a meal together mm-hmm. that breaks down barriers. I've been doing a lot of readings and presentations at bookstores, and not very long ago, somebody asked me this very same question. She said, there are people in my neighborhood I don't like. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I want to invite them to my house. And I said, I totally understand that, but give yourself a little bit of a challenge and invite them anyway. If they don't come, they don't come. But if they do come, I bet you might feel a little bit differently about them by the end of the evening.
Well, there is something to say about, you know, breaking bread with somebody or sharing your food somebody. And it definitely, I think, warms the heart. And, you know, a lot of peace talks are done over dinner. And if you think about it, a lot of business deals are over a meal. There's just something about sharing food and sharing that time together that's so wonderful. It connects people.
And it's an age-old thing. I mean, we human beings have been doing it for centuries and centuries and centuries.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing really new about this idea. I guess the only thing that's new is the kind of focus on soup. I started describing this book as not a cookbook at all, but a book about the power of soup to bring people together.
Well, that's something that I really liked about it was, especially for Answers for the Family, on how, you know, we try so hard to just bring families together, and it's so difficult these days just to get a family together at a dinner table and share a meal, but to involve the whole community. And you talk a lot about in many of your stories about how the community helps raise the children. And
yes.
I think it does take a village to raise a child sometimes, and parents could use that help. And the kids could use that structure and know that there's plenty of people in their neighborhood that they could go to for help or advice or guidance or what have you.
Yes. Well, the neighborhood where my brother lives, this is the soup night that started me thinking about this whole movement. Of course, that's the one I know best because I've been able to spend quite a bit of time there. And I am so deeply touched by how the whole neighborhood kind of puts its arms around the children. The children seem to belong to everybody there. And the parents know that as long as the kids are inside of somebody on that block, they're safe. So they don't have to worry. They don't have to be on edge and be nervous every single minute,
mm-hmm.
you know, the way so many parents are in the modern world, because we all know scary things happen all the time. One of the dads on that block said the most charming thing to me. He said, you know, having soup night here, because we all know each other, it's like the way the world was when I was a kid. You would run out the front door and play with your pals all day long, and nobody worried, you know, come home for supper, and that's fine.
Yeah, just be happy.
We have that here in our block because we all know each other.
Mm-hmm. And I think the rule used to be in before the streetlights went on.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, I have my own reasons why I think soup is such a strong appeal because, you know, it's so cozy and warm and comforting and everything else. But why do you think it has such a strong appeal?
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth. It's all of that. Plus, it's also, it's you don't have to fuss over it. It's simple to make. You can't hardly go wrong when you're making soup. You can, anybody can, pull leftovers out of the refrigerator, you know, add some chicken stock, add a few noodles, and you have soup. Everybody remembers when you were sick and mom brought chicken noodle soup and you instantly felt better.
Mm-hmm.
Something about soup makes you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very economical way to feed a lot of people. You can't do a four-course dinner party in the same way at all. And it has this sort of magical quality of putting people at ease and bringing people together because it's so homey. It's like being at home. It's like being a little kid and knowing that your mom's going to pat you on the head any minute now. It just has this sort of magical quality to it because it's soup, because it's warm. I see people put their hands, both hands around the bowl to kind of warm their hands, and they lean over and they take a whiff of the aroma, and this sort of sweet smile comes over their face. You know, it's like, oh, it's soup, isn't this wonderful?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a nice warm soup. But I also know in your book you have a lot of cold soups for the summer too, like the strawberry kvatcho and.
Yeah,
the red pepper,
the
tomato
book is organized into seasons, so a lot of people don't think about soup in the summertime, but there are some wonderful things, and there are quite a few soups that you can have either hot or cold, depending on how your temperature is running in those months where you're never really sure whether it's going to be cool or warm in the evening. And because it's focused around the seasons, you can kind of take best advantage of whatever's fresh in the market or fresh at the farmer's market. Or
kind of lost you there for just a moment. I'm just wondering if we got a mute button going on or what have you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't think so.
Well, you're back. That's good.
Okay.
So what were you saying? Could you repeat what you just said, please?
Well, I was just saying that because the recipes in this cookbook are organized into seasons, so that you can kind of make a soup out of whatever's fresh in the market or the farmer's market, mm-hmm. or in your own garden if you're lucky enough to have a garden space.
Yeah, and what's funny is you say soups are so simple and easy, and you know, for some of us, we always thought, oh, they're so fancy and there's so much to do, but they really aren't. You really break down the recipes to make them very simple. And what I really like, too, is you actually go so far as letting people know how to set up a soup pantry for themselves and how to make free stocks and all these wonderful little shortcuts that you have.
Right, because I think if you have, you know, five or six staples on hand, you can make a soup on the spur of the moment, because I've heard that before. People think that making soup is hard, and I just kind of scratch my head because I don't understand that. Making soup is the easiest thing in the world. I'm imagining somebody standing in front of the refrigerator and opening up the door, and there's a little bit of chicken left over from last night, and here's a couple of tomatoes, and there's some green beans that we had for Sunday supper, and with that, and a few noodles and a can of good quality chicken stock, you can make a soup. You can make a soup out of anything. We've come right down to it. It's always going to be great because the real thing is this other stuff we've been talking about, how warm and comforting and nourishing and nurturing it is. Plus, what we make soup out of is both inexpensive and nutritious. You make wonderful soups with beans and fresh vegetables and a little bit of meat if you're a meat eater. Or I try very hard in the book to explain how to adapt recipes for those who prefer to eat vegetarian style. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't matter. Soup is always going to taste good. I know this probably doesn't seem like that could possibly be true, but when you work in the factor that soup has this magical quality of making you feel good, mm-hmm. It's just going to be delicious. It's not hard. That's the message I want people to understand. It is not hard to make good soup.
You know, the thing is, I look at your recipes and they all look very doable for me. And I love to cook mm-hmm. too, but I love the first soup that you have in your book. It says cream of anything green soup. And that's kind of me when I sit in front of the refrigerator and go, oh yeah, I have those leftover beans or the broccoli or whatever it is, asparagus. I keep thinking, mm-hmm. what could I do with this? Or, you know, what have you. But I guess my main hiccup is I never know what kind of herbs and spices to put in. I'm always I shouldn't be so fear-based, but I'm always afraid I'm going to put too much pepper or too much salt or too much this or too much that. When you do soup for the community, I mean, thinking about, you know, the spices and the salts and all that, do you undertone it a little bit, thinking that some people might be on special diets, or do you put a label on it and say soup inside, or not soup? Of course it's soup inside, salt inside.
That's a very good approach. And not only for the herbs and spices, but I know people who prepare a large pot of soup that would be vegan. It has no dairy products in it and no meat in it. And then over on the side, they have small bowls of grated cheese or sour cream or bacon bits or, you know, a little bit of ground beef already cooked up so that people can add whatever they need to make it to fit their taste. It's real easy to be flexible that way and think about something that you start with a basic soup, and then the add-ons put off to the side so people can kind of control what they want, and you can deal with food allergies that way very easily. Because if people do a soup night, they're going to be feeding a fairly large number, maybe 20, maybe 30 people. The recipes in the book are geared to serve six because I know people will want to use them for their own family meals. Mm-hmm. But then I explain how to increase them for larger quantities. And I always say, when you increase the herbs and spices, add them just a little bit extra at a time and then taste it. In other words, don't just automatically double the amount of curry powder or the double amount of cumin, but add a little bit more, give it a taste, add a little bit more, give it a taste, because you can't take it out, but you can always add more.
That's true. Now, I have a question I've been dying to ask. When you make a soup that has cream in it or milk, or I like cook with goat's milk because I'm allergic to cow's milk, but can you freeze a milk-based soup?
I wouldn't. I would leave the milk out. I do everything but the milk, and then freeze your concentrate, and then add the milk when you get ready to serve it.
Okay. I was always curious about that because I always wanted to freeze up my soup. Mm-hmm. I'm going, I don't think I could do that without it breaking when you reheat it. So
I don't know any way to avoid that either.
Oh, okay. Well, how long actually have you been doing the soup nights?
Well, the one that I write about in the book, the story of that one carries all the way through. Mm-hmm. They've been doing it for about 8 years, but I found some of the groups that have for which the stories are in the book have been getting together for more than 20 years.
Wow.
So the kids have grown up from the beginning, grown up with these other families, and sometimes they've gone off and they now live on their own, and they have families of their own, and they always come back for soup night because they love seeing the other people there, and the adults love seeing them and finding out what's going on in their life. That's one of the aspects of this that I found so touching, is people love this so much. They are so proud of what they've accomplished. They love it. They love talking about it. They love it when some relatives are visiting from out of town and they happen to be there on soup night. They say, oh, you got to come along with this. You got to see this. You're just going to love it. One woman told me about a time when her husband had a business associate come from out of town for several days of meetings, and it happened to coincide with their neighborhood soup night. So they invited him, and he came along, and he had the best time. He said it was so much more fun doing that than eating dinner by himself in a hotel room. It means an awful lot to people who've had these groups, particularly the ones that have been going for years and years. And they say, we can't imagine missing it. If somebody invites us to do something else on the soup night, we say, sorry, that's soup night, and we never miss it. They just love it.
And that's wonderful. And what a wonderful tradition, too, for some people that can't get back to their hometown and their roots for soup night. I'm sure that's inspiration for them to start one in the new neighborhood of wherever they land.
And that happened a lot. I found about 8 or 10 instances where that happened. They moved to a new place, and they took the tradition with them, so it kind of the idea doubled itself or quadrupled itself. Mm-hmm. I really hope that if we were having this conversation this time next year, there'd be 1,000 soup groups around the country. I would love that.
Well, I know that you write about several different groups from around the world, it seems like, in your book, and definitely around the country. And I'm sure there's even more great stories that you could share. Could you share just a couple different ones that you have that intrigue you the most?
Sure. This is one of my favorites. I was talking earlier about the fact that it means so much to these people that they never want to miss it. In one case, I think this was the group, outside of Boston. One of their families was in Singapore for a 1 month sabbatical. The dad was sent there by his company, and so the whole family went. They took the kids out of school, and they had this wonderful time exploring the Far East. But when soup night came, they didn't want to miss it. So the people in their home, their hometown, they Skyped each other in. So the family in Singapore, it was breakfast time. So they were eating breakfast while everybody else was having their soup. But they got to eat together because they didn't want to miss each other.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and I actually found quite a few groups that use soup, nonprofit groups that use soup as a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. There one is a church group that kids in the youth group puts on a soup luncheon on Sunday right after Sunday services, and everybody comes down to the rec room and has this wonderful soup supper together. A nonprofit here in my hometown that has a soup cook-off. It's kind of like a chili cook-off, except this is all soup, and people get to vote. And the way they vote is they tuck dollar bills into a great big glass jar beside the soup that they like the best. And so whoever wins gets an award, which is a gigantic soup ladle that's inscribed. They get to keep it for a year, and then next year it has to go to that year's winner. And then they count up the money. And of course, the money goes to the nonprofit, but the winner gets to keep this big award for the year. Mostly, the most wonderful thing for me is how everybody. It's interesting enough that people ended up using the same language. Several different times, I heard this idea. It's made our neighborhood like a small town.
Wow.
Here we are. This one in Houston, they said, we live in the fourth largest city in the country. And yet, because we have this soup together once a month, it's like our neighborhood's like a small town. I also heard a similar idea several other times, which is it's like going back to the way the world was in the 1950s, mm-hmm. or the way the world was when I grew up. That everybody knows everybody, takes care of each other, loves being together. I was just in this Portland neighborhood where my brother lives. I was over there a couple of weeks ago, and it happened to be a sunny afternoon, which we don't get a lot of in Oregon this time of year, but it was a beautiful sunny afternoon, and I walked past this front yard where there were two big Adirondack chairs in the front yard, and there were two people sitting in those chairs and a third person sitting on the ground. None of those three people were from the same family, and none of those three people lived in the house where the chairs were. They just all sort of move around and sit down and visit with whoever they want to because they all feel so close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And one fellow said to me, sometimes it takes me 2 hours to walk. It takes me an hour to walk two blocks because I stop and talk to everybody because I know them all.
That's wonderful. Now, I'm just curious because I'm sure the little kids love this and run around, and you talk a lot about how the crazy chaos is so wonderful with the little kids there. And the adults enjoy it, too. How do the teenagers react to we're going to soup night?
Most of them that I talk to absolutely love it. The teenagers that I had a chance to meet, of course, like all teenagers, are incredibly busy with full schedules of schoolwork and extracurricular stuff and all kinds of stuff. But they come because there's a couple of other teenagers there that they enjoy hanging out with. They maybe go to different schools and wouldn't see them otherwise. My niece was a teenager when I started researching this book, and I asked her about it at some length, and she said, I applaud her for being candid. She said, people kind of always ask me the same questions, which is, how are things at school, and what kind of sports are you playing this year? And she said, you know, and I just kind of get tired of answering the same questions. And I said, sweetheart, you know what that is. They're really interested in your life, and they don't know what else to ask. And she said, I know, and I love them, and I love seeing them, so it's okay. And I talked to, over the phone, several people who have teenage kids, and they talked to me about what they do. They have a good time watching out for the littler kids. It seems a fairly common thing that the teenagers give themselves the job of making sure the little kids are okay and you know, have their soup ready, and so that the grown-ups can spend time with each other.
Oh, that's nice. I bet more parents would like that.
Yeah.
More adult time. I happen to worry about the kids. Now, Maggie, we need to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just about a minute. If you could stand by, we got plenty more questions, and a couple listeners emailed in a few questions as well and comments, so I'll get to those in just a few minutes. Everybody stay tuned for more Answers to the Family. We'll be back in just a moment.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back with more Answers for the Family. I'm your host today, Dr. Melody Fox. And Alan Cardoza is off on working on a case, hopefully finding that runaway teen and bringing her back safely very soon. And he should be back with us again next week for more Answers for the Family. Now, our guest today is a wonderful woman who has been talking about soup. And she wrote this great book called Soup Night, Recipes for Creating Community Around a Pot of Soup. Maggie Stuckey, thank you for holding on. We've got some more questions to ask you about this wonderful concept. And I just adore it. And I think it's wonderful for families. And even, like you said, the recipes in the book, they're made for about 6 to 8 people. And so it's perfect for a family if you just want to keep soup night in the family realm. But expanding to the whole community is such a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah. You asked me about earlier about a couple of stories. One of the stories is about a family, and they have a soup night one night a week. I'm going to say Tuesday. I don't remember for sure. The oldest son in the family was old enough to be out on his own, and mom, like mothers do, worried that he wasn't eating right. So every once a week they would have this soup supper, and he would come back, and they would just have a quiet time, as they knew that it was a good time to get together, talk about what's going on, anything troubling you, anything good happened this week they want to talk about. Just a nice quiet evening with the immediate family. Then last summer, this young man got married, and now he and his wife come and do the same thing. And a colleague of the father in this family mentioned at their company Christmas party that they had heard about the fact that they were doing this family soup night, and this is such a wonderful idea, they decided to start it in their family because they have grown children who are out on their own. And it seemed like there's something about having it on a regular night that makes it possible and workable for busy people. You don't have to think about what you're going to do on a Tuesday. You know what you're going to do. You're going to go to mom and dad's and have soup.
Sounds like a wonderful plan. Now, I have a couple of listener comments here, and one is a statement I concur with. It's, what an amazing concept. I mean, she writes, or he writes, I'm not sure who wrote this in, but it says, we live in an everyday suburban neighborhood that is lovely to look at, but totally disconnected from each other. We were in the Northeast hurricane flooding a couple years back, which did help us start that process as neighbors came out to help each other. But after that, nothing continued to keep going. So I've decided to actually stage a soup night in a little park down the street in late May. Hopefully we can make it a monthly event. And I bought your book just 2 weeks ago, and I'm so grateful for the inspiration.
Isn't that wonderful? Oh, I hope it works. That sounds great. Did I understand correctly something about a hurricane in there?
They wrote they were in the Northeast hurricane flooding a couple years back. So I'm not sure where that was exactly, but I'm sure it'll be a success. I can't imagine it would not be.
And if there's any way, please let me know about that. I love to hear about new organizations that I missed the first time around.
Well, another comment here is, after reading your book on Answers for the Family site, I asked my class of fifth graders if they would be interested in doing a soup night here at the school and invite the other classes to participate. They were so excited, they started talking about doing the cooking themselves, and now the parents are calling saying it is a brilliant idea. Does your book provide ideas on how to manage the process, and does it have recipes as well? Well, of course it has recipes, and we're talking about that. And it does talk about how to manage things, but you might have a little bit more insight. She goes on to write, if so, I'll buy it and encourage the parents to do so as well. Ellen in Long Beach, California. So,
oh, that's wonderful. That sounds fabulous. If I understand this correctly, they're going to do a soup night in somewhere inside the school classroom.
I don't know if it's a classroom or a home ec room or what have you, but it sounds like a great idea, especially since so many kids don't get a good solid meal.
Right. Oh, talk about heartbreak. Every time I hear that comment, I just feel like crying. I personally haven't talked to anybody that did this event in a classroom, but it might be quite similar to one thing that I do know about, which happens in a church setting. Mm-hmm. And what they do is the parents bring in slow cookers, several different soups, or they bring in a tray of cookies, or they bring in a big bowl of salad. Mm-hmm. Now, if the kids themselves are doing it, I'm going to assume that they have cooking facilities there at the school. Let's see, some good soups that the kids could do. With the only worry I would have with children cooking is when they're chopping stuff with a big knife. Mm-hmm. So look for recipes that rely on, say, canned beans, which all you have to do there is a can opener, and you want to rinse them really well because often the brine that they're packed in is maybe too salty. Mm-hmm. But vegetables, sometimes in the supermarket you can find bags of vegetables that are already cut in the appropriate sizes that you would want. And then little kids seem to like noodle soups, like chicken noodle soups, and so you look for a pasta that's a small size so it fits in a spoon easily and doesn't drape over the side like long pieces of spaghetti would. Paper bowls would be easier to manage if it's a whole classroom. You wouldn't have to do quite so much cleanup. Uh-huh. A lot of people have commented that they need to put two bowls together for extra weight so it doesn't burn your hands. Uh-huh. Since I can't really picture what the environment, what the setting might be where this is going to happen, it's a little hard to be any more specific than that, except to say that it's going to be fantastic, especially if the kids are doing all the planning and doing the cooking. It's going to be fantastic no matter what.
Yeah, and I was just thinking a lot of schools have little vegetable gardens, too, and like in a horticulture class or just vegetables being grown for science to teach them how beans sprout or what have you. So that might be pretty interesting, too, to do in some of those schools. So actually, we'd love to hear back from you, Ellen, in Long Beach to see how it's going, and we could pass along your comments to Maggie.
I would love to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. Now for us regular folks that are out in the community that aren't going to the schools to create this either, how do people really get this started and how do they contribute? I mean, how do you start a soup night in your neighborhood?
Well, I'll tell you some of the most common things. And the fact that they are the most common means this is kind of people have figured out this sort of works. The very first thing you would do if you want to start from scratch is figure out what the boundaries of your group are. And it may be physical geographic boundaries, or you may just think what would be a group that would work. It could be everybody in your Sunday school class. It could be everybody in your cul-de-sac. It could be everybody on your block. It could be everybody who went to the same high school. You know, however you want to define your body of people. Mm-hmm. And then I'm gonna talk about an actual neighborhood because that's kind of the easiest way, and it gives some that you can translate to other settings. The very best thing to do, first of all, make up a little piece of information, a little flyer that says what you're all about, and in big type, the date and the time of the first soup night. And go door to door and introduce yourself. And if at all possible, take one other neighbor with you. Maybe somebody, if you know some of the people on the block, invite somebody who knows some of the other people on the block, and just introduce yourself and say what it's all about. And if nobody's home, leave a little note and come back. What makes a real difference is that very first contact is in person. So people really see what you're about and they don't think it's some kind of goofy scam. And organize it in a way that makes it as easy as possible for people to come. They don't have to RSVP. They don't have to bring anything. It's a specific time frame, let's say, for example, 6 to 8. Sunday evening seems to work well for most people. Sunday evening from 6 to 8, let's say that arbitrarily. So they know it's a specific time frame and it's not an open-ended thing. And it's time for the kids to come home because it's a school night tomorrow. Everybody knows that it's okay to leave by 8 o'clock. So they know what they're getting in for. And you just say, we're having soup and bread. People will bring other things, at least in the part of the country where I live. It's really quite common for people to say, oh, what can I bring? and if they want to do that, of course, you accept, but it's not an expectation. And the other thing, this is so wonderful, Dave, and so that the host, whoever's hosting that month, doesn't have to be burdened with a whole lot of dirty dishes. The one thing you ask of everybody that comes is that they bring their own bowl and spoon, and then take it home. Take it home when it gets dirty. The reason that I'm laughing is this is the very first image that I have of the soup night, the first one I ever heard about and saw. I stood on my brother's front porch, and at almost exactly the same moment, all the doors up and down the block started to open, and people came out, and there was all these families and little kids running ahead And everybody was carrying an empty bowl and with a soup spoon sticking up it. So there was this lovely parade of people walking down the sidewalk, everybody carrying an empty soup bowl. I thought it was an incredibly clever way to make it easier on the person that's the hosting. And then I found several of other groups in other parts of the country do the exact same thing. One of them has on their invitations BYOBS. Bring your own bowl and spoon.
Oh. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of talking of BS going around a little bit, too. Make it interesting for the night. Lots of stories in the neighborhood.
In some cases, the same household is the host all the time and makes the soup all the time. I talked to several people who say, and they basically said the same thing. I see this as my gift to the neighborhood. If people want to bring stuff to compliment the dinner, that's fine, but I'm happy to do this. The more common arrangement is that people take turns being the host and cooking the soup. And a very common thing is that there's a kind of a sign-up sheet that they start at the beginning of soup season, however people define that term. They put out a sign-up sheet and people just volunteer. Somebody says, okay, I'll take January. Somebody else says, I'll take February. And pretty soon it's all done. It's also really common that people make two different soups, one of which is vegetarian and one of which is not. And maybe they put out some bread and that's it.
And that sounds wonderful. Now, I know in your book you have a lot more recipes than just soups. You have some wonderful recipes for desserts like lemon ice cream or whole wheat peanut butter cookies, but you also have some for many different salads and types of salads as well. I mean, this is a very extensive place, and I want to go to your house for soup night.
You would be welcome. I would love it.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it just sounds so wonderful, and your cold strawberry soup sounds just delicious for the summer. But to me, I would think it would be more like dessert than soup.
Yes. Often, the fruit soups often are served as desserts or as kind of a first course sometimes,
So you might have a cold soup and then a hot soup?
I've never seen that, but I don't know why you couldn't.
I guess there's no real rules to soup, right? You just serve.
There is no real rule, and there's no way to go wrong. That's the other thing. You just can't make a mistake with soup. The book has altogether 140 recipes. 99 of them are soup, and then the others are there's a few breads, a few salads, and a few desserts. So in any of the four seasons, you could find ideas of putting an entire meal together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing I wanted to mention is the great majority of the recipes came to me from people who participate in these soup groups around the country. I asked if they'd like to share their favorite soup recipes with readers of the book. And don't you know, they sent me their very best recipes. So because they are scattered all over the country, we have regional specialties and regional different kinds of regional ingredients. And in some people, some very nice ethnic recipes. So it's a nice cross-section of different cuisines from all around the country.
Mm. Well, you have one that's actually in your part of the country, Portland, Oregon, of asparagus leek chowder that just sounds so superb and so good.
Oh, it is. It would be wonderful right now because asparagus is at its peak right now as we're speaking. It is really good. That's a good one.
It just looks really good. In fact, I'm just thinking about my way home from the studio, picking up some groceries to make some of that tonight. It just sounds so delicious and looks so good, too. I mean, you have some beautiful pictures inside your book of how the soups are supposed to turn out or what they look like as well.
Yeah, I like cookbooks that have photographs in them. You know, if you're doing something that you've never done before, it's really helpful to have a picture of what the finished product might be.
Mm, absolutely. So what are a few of your favorite soups that off the top of your head that you think would be like perfect in the springtime since it's spring right now?
In the springtime, well, one of my all-time favorites, and one of the reasons that I like it, two reasons I like it, most of the ingredients are things you're likely to have on hand anyway, and it's good about any time of year, is African peanut soup from my friend Ann Armstrong. It is chicken soup with pieces of chicken and chicken stock and tomatoes and rice, and then onions and garlic and green pepper, which is kind of a common beginning of a lot of soups. You saute onions and garlic and a few spices. And it has in it a big spoonful of peanut butter, which we know is going to add protein. When I say peanut butter, people get this funny look on their face because they're picturing a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's not like that at all. It doesn't taste sweet in the least. The peanut butter on its own is just usually a little bit salty and tangy, and it adds this wonderful richness that you can't quite put your finger on. Also, I like to tell the story of, well, you know, where peanuts came to this country from Africa, from the people who were brought to Africa as slaves, brought peanuts with them because they're native to that part of the world. That one is really delicious. And many of the springtime vegetables, like peas and spinach and asparagus and leeks, I don't know why. This is not necessarily anything other than just it's been planted in my brain at some point. I think of leeks as being springtime. Another one that's really wonderful is if you, where you are, it's probably already warm. Any of the gazpacho, there's a couple of different gazpacho recipes. Gazpacho is this wonderful soup that's wonderful because it's so versatile. It has a tomato base. It's a cold soup, and the tomato liquid is the base, but then you just add to it any vegetables that are fresh. So depending what you feel like, what looks good in the market, what's at the peak of its season at that moment, you can make terrific gazpacho out of that. Let's see, cream of anything green.
I love that.
It's a way I figured out to use up leftovers. So, you know, it could be, it would work really well with spinach because spinach is, if you don't cook it very long, it retains its beautiful, gorgeous green color. And you just feel like you're eating vitamins. You're eating so healthy, but it tastes so good.
That just sounds so good, just right now. But I'm just curious, too. Well, not curious. I just think it would be really wonderful for a family. I mean, if they have their own little family garden, to be picking the vegetables, getting the kids involved in it, help stirring the soup or blending it, or the older kids to be chopping up the vegetables and really taking part in building this soup for the community. I just think that's such a wonderful connection and a wonderful family project, I would think.
Particularly if the family lives in a place where they can have a few vegetables growing, even if, you know, you can grow actually quite a lot of vegetables in a container garden. I live in a condominium, and that's where I grow my vegetables because I have a patio about the size of a handkerchief. I just have a lot of containers, and I grow a lot of vegetables in them. And kids love growing vegetables because it's like a treasure hunt, you know. They go digging for radishes, and they can't believe that under the ground there's something good to eat. Here comes a radish. Here comes a potato. Oh, isn't this fun? We all know, we adults know, that working together in the kitchen is a really wonderful way to sort of be together and be, you kind of talk freely about stuff that's on your mind, and then when you incorporate the children in that, they see the adults doing this good stuff together and feeling comfortable with each other. One of the dads in the from one of the soup night groups said this thing to me that is so wonderful and so poignant. He said, Our soup night is really for the kids in the neighborhood, and they don't even know it yet. He said that they think it's just a great big party, but what they're really watching is adults behaving cooperatively together, and what a great thing that is to grow up with. Mm-hmm. And absolutely. It is. It's an amazing way to grow up watching all these different adults. They may be very different from your own parents, but you learn all kinds of different things from seeing different lifestyles, different value systems, and yet everybody's come together with this wonderful bond because they know they want to be real neighbors. They right. don't want to live among strangers.
Exactly. And on that note, Maggie, we're going to have to wrap up our show. I wish we could talk more about this, but I do encourage everyone to go out and check out your book, Soup Night, Recipes for Creating Community Around a Pot of Soup. Our guest today is the author, Maggie Stuckey. Thank you so much, Maggie, for sharing so many little tidbits, and I could hear the joy of it in your voice, and I was joyful reading your book and all the little stories that you put in it. And please join us back again next week for more Answers for the Family here on LA Talk Radio. Take care.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and guest host Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.